Forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bella Lost Souls podcast. This is episode 167. Got Chris Morgan and Adam Abramowitz.
Not your average $9 an hour custodian.
You know what? I ain't your sister.
You know, that's just what we do around here. How cool are those models?
What do you mean by that, Paul? What do you mean by that? Why do you have to be all rusty with me?
Oh, that's going to be one of those.
I'm not even touching that. Nope.
How cool are these models?
Oh my gosh,
they're
dude.
Really cool.
We're talking about the Custos and the Sisters of Silence and then the Burning of Prospero box set. This box set, immense value, and then figures we never really thought that we'd see. I honestly never thought I'd see these figures released
Bjorn
like
Fellhanded before he was Bjorn.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Custos and Sisters.
No, leave Gygor out of this, all right?
So I have to say this, and my initial reactions when I saw this box set were, these have to be Forge World models, because they were the grainy black and white photos, and the detail was so resolute and so precise that there's no way that it was injection molded plastic. It had to have been fine cast. It had to have been resin. Sure enough, Games Workshop, I think with this release, beyond any that we've seen in the past 24 months, proves that they have hit a completely different level. They are on another plane when it comes to injection molded plastic models. And kudos to them for that.
Stuff is out of control. You know, there's been different kind of custodes over the years. The original ones were, you know, maybe we see some throwbacks of these. They're almost like wearing like dusters with no shirt. You guys remember this picture?
Like Egyptian slaves?
They're essentially wearing like overcoats with no shirts. They've still got the helmets and the pole arm, but they don't have any of the other, like, Space Marine armor.
Oh, you're talking about the old art?
Yeah, the old, always, but so the game talked about how just absolutely gnarly they were, and then you see this picture that's, like, incredibly 80s.
They're like bro-down Marines?
I don't want to describe it. They were still cool. I would have played with those figures. These figures, of course, leaps and bounds and more akin to what we've seen on the Heresy books.
Especially with the glaives. Like, to me, the hardest sell about Custodian Guard was the idea of, I put a big old blade on my bolt gun and it's supposed to operate like a bolt gun and a glaive. But whoever designed those halberds really combined those elements in a believable way for me that worked in a way I wasn't expecting.
Believable way.
Well,
I just think
when I say believable in 40K context or 30K context, you know what I mean.
I'm just one to track. I'm just trying to follow along.
The thing that sold it to me was that I remember reading, and I can't, Chris could probably tell you based on what I'm about to say, what book or essay I was reading, but they talked about the Custodes and what was it, the Thunder Warriors or the Thunder, what was the pre-Space Marine, Space Marine?
Yeah, Thunder Warriors. Thunder Warriors. You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Thunder Warriors and how they were believed to have been even larger than modern day Space Marines, and that the Custodes were descendants of the last remaining Thunder Warriors. And you see that in the models. I mean, I believe that they're taller than even Terminators. Have we seen a comparison, a side by side comparison? Are they on 40 mil bases or 50?
That's a good question.
That is a good question on the base size. So far as their direct relation to the Thunder Warriors,
I do not believe they have a relation to the Thunder Warriors. I think they were created after the Thunder Warriors.
I don't know that they do. I think that was a rumor in one of the books. Like, the people spoke as if they were direct descendants.
The Thunder Warriors are definitely awesome. Like, I want to see a board game where we do the Techno-Barbarian Wars, the Unification Wars of Earth. That's what I want to see. That's because those things stood up to Thunder Warriors. The stuff on Earth stood up to Thunder Warriors, and the Thunder Warriors are more powerful than your average Space Marine.
Well, physically, right? They're basically the blunt edged weapon that you hit someone with a dull sword, they'll still die.
I think a couple of the remaining Thunder Warriors would disagree with you on that.
I'm sure that they would. As far as I can tell, and I'm looking up on the Lexicanum here, Adeptus Custodes feel more like the Thunder Warriors. They are created by a similar process, is what it's saying, but not that. I mean, the key difference being that they are rumored to be made from the genetic material of the Emperor, much like the Space Marines are to the Primarchs, the Custodian Guard are to the Emperor.
I certainly believe it looking at their models. And then as they're starting to do these whole coordinated releases and stuff, we got a teaser pick from Forge World looking at a Custode's tank. I mean, we're going to see a full-on release for these guys. And I know right now there's a lot of contention over, you know, how do you actually include these in a 40K force? But everybody just relax. The game's
why
not
are we
technically
about that? Why
out
are we, yet. Yeah, why? Yeah, why are we even worried about that? They're just debuting cool models at this point. You know, we know that Games Workshop has been known to release cool models and then rules later.
Absolutely. And then White
the
Dwarf.
The rules are coming.
In the White Dwarf, it says you can, you know, not this is not 40K, it's 30K stuff. I think that you can take the squads as the HQ slots or the elite slots. Like it just takes, so you could have three or four squads of them to fill out a forest org chart. And I think that's even a really cool approach to it.
Yeah, kind of in the same vein as the Knights Errant that fill the HQ slot. They're part of your loyalist army and they fill that slot, but you don't have an army list for just those guys.
I've long been a believer of a couple things like Inquisition, the books that aren't fully fleshed out books, like Codex Inquisition, Assassins, and now like we're looking at, I can't say Codex Custodes or Codex Sisters of Silence, but Imperial allies, Imperial elites like these, they should be able to like maybe fill in like an elite slot, or maybe there needs to be, you know, we have the auxiliary slot in formations. I think maybe there should be an auxiliary slot into the CAD where you could throw in an Imperial Fist Army, one Assassin, one Codiez, without having to worry about troops or anything like that in the Allied chart.
That's not a bad suggestion.
That makes more sense.
I wouldn't mind something like that. Now, of course, it sends everything into a tailspin, I guess, of how you build stuff. But I don't even want to jump into theory either. I just want to enjoy the fact that we actually have these models that I don't think 5 years ago people would have realistically, now we might have pie in the sky, dreamt about it, but I don't think anyone realistically thought that we were going to have these models in our hands.
Yeah, I think the contention about the rules in 40K right now is still a bit premature, but I am just happy seeing them in the game, just kind of like what you're saying right there, Paul. I love the idea of having them. I love the execution of them physically. I love the rules for them, especially in 30K. I think that they're fulfilling that promise a little bit.
So can I, Paul, forgive me, I'm going to take a quick sidebar, but this will come back to what we're talking about right now, I think, and what's going on with GW and the new releases that we've been seeing over the past 6 to 12 months. So I read an article recently that talked about how we are the age of nostalgia, right? Everybody listening to this show is remembering times from the 90s, late 80s.
You're not talking about gamers. Talking about like just our overall demographic.
Our generation. Yeah. Our demographic of people. Gamers, though, like, not just gamers. It's overall all consumers. Anybody that purchases something that is living and breathing. And we're going through a very nostalgic period where we're looking at things fondly. And that's why something like the new Nintendo, the mini Nintendo, whatever it's called, can come out and is probably going to have huge success, right?
I will be getting that.
And it's going to have, right, you're going to get it. I wonder if that's where GW is going. Maybe they were at a conference or something. They heard like, this is the trick. This is how you make your next $1 million or whatever it is. And like, let's bring back the stuff that makes people think of like nostalgic GW, especially after a lot of customers lost faith, left the wagon, and I believe a lot of them are starting to come back with these new releases. Like, it's working.
I think it's a little less complicated than that. I think that some of this stuff was impossible, like mold wise. Like you're talking about the advances in injection molding. I don't think this stuff was to put it out, because you don't want to do something like this and it not be what people expect. And I mean, that's kind of a fear. You put out a product that doesn't meet the expectations. And previously, technology wise, with some of these molds, I don't think that it was possible to meet expectations. And now, you know, we're evolving to where it's now possible to exceed those expectations with this stuff.
So I have to, I'm not going to say that I disagree with you, Paul, but I want to challenge you, because we've had Abaddon, the same model for Abaddon up until recently. For how many years? 10 years?
Sure.
I mean, it went from metal
it's been
to
a while.
Metal to resin
it's been
or,
at least.
Yeah, I mean, it,
I would say
and
longer.
Up until the past.
Yeah, it's close to
three
20 years.
6 months.
He's a second edition.
Eldrad.
Okay.
Eldrad's been around since at least third edition.
But he's been updated.
Has Codiez been updated?
Codiez is not a second edition model. Well, where are you going with this, though? Because some of these models, it's different. Those are special characters that that automatically put them in a lower print run category, and the demand for them is much much smaller.
Okay.
But
and no one needs an army of 20 Codiez, as though I'm sure someone wanted to
once. I do need an army of 20
Unbound.
Codiez and also 20 Abaddons.
In the 40K multiverse, there can be only 20.
Well, anyway, I don't want to take us too far off topic. This is, again, let's just be happy we got it. The game uses 12-siders. I mean, we talked about this a little bit at the end of the last show. Kind of curious to see how that plays out. I've already picked up the box of the game. Cannot wait to kind of read over the rules and absorb it and just play it for what it is. I will, of course, be using these models in 30K and 40K, though, no doubt.
So, Paul, did you read the little designer half an hour – or read, rather, watch the design interview for the box game?
Not yet, Warhammer, but I find them fascinating, and I will be watching it.
Yeah, I watched that recently, and they did with those dice the same sort of thing that I have, you know, kind of wish-listed about 40K, in that the better units use the dice with more sides, and they have like a little crit mechanic in there. Once you get your hands on the rulebook – I think that you'll be interested in what's going on there.
Pretty cool. Cannot wait. Another thing I can't wait for is we're coming up close to Warzone Atlanta. That's November 11th through the 13th. You guys heard us talk about
that. Gosh, that is coming up real quick.
It just dawned on me today. Like I formerly have driven to the previously Forge Narrative Seasonal. I've driven to the last Warzone, the inaugural Warzone. I can't drive this year because I'm too far away, and I have to fly. Like, how am I going to get my army there? Like, I was in a panic this morning thinking about it.
Man, let me tell you, Army Transport, one of the sponsors of the event, and it's not, I'm not even intentionally plugging them right now, but that was my go-to.
I'm just that good at the segues.
That was one of my go-tos for airline travel, because their motor pool bag fits in the overhead very well, where some of the other ones do not. Now, of course, check your airline. I'm not telling you to do that if it doesn't meet your airline specifications. But it's the plug foam, and I still use Army Transport. That's what my Chaos Army is in. It fits it.
I'll check them out.
Yeah, I mean, if it sits, it fits. Or I think I
have
whatever.
I think I have the Battle Foam 720, and that's what I need to find out if that fits.
It does not. But one of the cool things about the plug foam is that you can use it for sponging for weathering. So this product
is incredibly practical.
It is. Oh, I've ruined a couple of perfectly designed slots because I couldn't find my other weathering chipping sponge.
It's like, all right, you are now a Terminator slot instead of a Scout slot.
Indeed.
You've been promoted. I'm going to need this.
But putting the finishing touches on everything, confirming all the cool things, special things with the hotel. I've got the schedule. We're going to be trying to do roll dice on the combat patrol and the X-Wing event about around 6 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. respectively, or 6:15 p.m. respectively, for the Friday night events. This is the first year we're having some real legitimate Friday night events. I know we've got some people that are coming in specifically for the combat patrol event. And then, of course, some people with their VIP tickets, and then the others that got the Friday night event included, and some people picked it up after the fact. Should be a really fun time. Looking forward to doing that. Combat Patrol fits really well for some quick events, and looking forward to seeing what people put together for the 30K side of it. You know,
only a shame that the Custodian Guard came out too late to join in the combat.
They have 2+ saves.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You have that little caveat on there. That's right.
Yeah, that's part of the combat
patrol. The combat patrol
rule set. Although we added an inclusion of one model with a 2+ save, just to kind of give that more heroic feel of things. Because I really want this to be captured from that Isfahan 3 massacre, where you've got people that doing work. I think it's going to be very cinematic. The missions that we played out for that have been pretty exciting. Looking forward to running that. And it should be quick. You know, the rounds are going to be about an hour and 15 minutes long. Should get people done in plenty of time to maybe have a late dinner if they want, get ready for the main event the next morning, where registration will start at 8 a.m. for that.
And even if you're coming in a little bit later, or you're not able to play in this event, it's always worth stopping by on Friday, because there's going to be people just hanging out. You know, there might be some new people that are going without friends that want to meet other gamers, you know, shake hands, make friends, because I tell you what, the friends that you make on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Warzone are going to be the friendships that last you a lifetime, because I feel bad for the people that I met last year, because they're hearing from me all the time.
Dude, there were people helping us set up last year. It was great. People coming in, like, as we're getting there, all the tables set up, people bringing in some beers. Never going to say no to that. You know, it's just a real social. This is the best combination of social and competitive, and just, I mean, it's just a good time. It's just a great event. Can't say enough about the guys helping put this on. Real proud to be a part of it and to be organizing this. But people probably hear it. We're going to do a lot of coverage too. We're going to have some streaming coverage. I'll be running some of that myself. Going to be trying to do some player interviews in between rounds or as we can, or some spotter interviews. Going to be uploading them to YouTube. I might even try that Facebook Live thing. Somebody help me, you know, walk me through that.
I want to be round one again this year. This would be 3 years running that I'm on table one, round one, at a Forge Narrative event.
We might be able to arrange that. There was one of the neat things about
John Keenan again.
One of the neat things about last year was that you know, our feature table, we were able to kind of pick and choose who we wanted to go there. Or if there was we thought it was going to be a grudge match, or we thought it was just two awesomely painted armies that we really wanted to capture and show out to people, we did. And so we'll have that flexibility this year as well.
It's kind of fun playing on TV, because you're playing the game, you're playing against your opponent, but it almost takes the stress out of the event, especially round one, because you want to do well round one, because it's going to set the tone for the rest of the weekend. But in front of the cameras, you almost don't care quite as much, or maybe you care a little bit more because you don't want to embarrass yourself. But it's just, as long as you're having a good time in front of camera, and I think you're more dialed in.
I think you're definitely more attuned to what's going on when you're playing on camera.
Not me. Having
watched Adam on camera.
Yeah, when I'm on camera, I want to talk to everybody behind watching. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I hope you had a good time doing it last year. We're definitely going to continue that this year. And it's going to have a merch booth, going to have some t-shirts there available, it's going to have other things, going to have some vendors there this year, more than we had previously. It's a really good time. And I think this, you hit on the real gem of it is just the real community aspect of it that you can't, it's hard to get across in words, but you know, everybody had a great time last year by all accounts.
Yeah, and I honestly, I think one of my favorite things about our events is that video coverage that we're able to do. When I was a listener, that was my first experience watching games played live and battle reports and things like that. And from then on, I've seen it just pick up more and more at events that are doing, like LVO this year had streaming of the top tables, and I would love to see more of that continue, and I'm happy to say that Forge Narrative is kind of one of the opening pioneers or something like that, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, us and Adepticon
taking the lead. Yeah,
yeah, it was that was what kind of got the bug for me, was playing in some really cool games hosted by the independent characters at Adepticon.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
They're kind of like our 40K podcast idols, right?
They are.
Is that fair to say?
They are. Yeah, those guys do just a great show.
They're friends. Carl's awesome. That and,
yeah. So, been getting ready for the 30K event, doing some painting and stuff. I've got a ringer army if I need to get in there and play. I've been putting together AdMech, been just doing some weathering or more weathering. I love doing it. And I find myself in this multi-step process where I'm doing there's a bunch of steps, and I find myself not always following all the steps. And so I've gotten more diligent about taking notes about the steps that I do, so I can refer to it almost like a recipe. You guys do anything like that?
There's an app that my buddy recommended when I first started getting serious about painting and, you know, starting to use good paints and better brushes and taking more time on it, where it was an app that let him organize all of his projects by name and the paints that he used, the steps. It was very, very detailed. I didn't learn any of that. I got it. I opened it up. I was like, this is too hard. I'm just going to remember. So there are resources out there. And my friend, I think he still uses those, But
I'm pretty sure just a notepad also works.
I've also used Google Docs. Like, there was a time I was doing a commission for somebody that wanted the recipe, so I put all of the colors I used in the steps on a Google Doc and shared it with them. So
you can't. So if an app works for Chris and if it motivates him, because I think in your boat, Paul, like an app is not going to help me. A piece of paper would probably help me a lot better, but if an app or something that's a little bit more techy, whether it's a, you know, opening Google Notes or Google Docs to help you with your project or something on your phone, whatever helps you stay on task.
Yeah. Yeah.
The step for me, go ahead, Paul.
Oh, no, the step for me was, it's one of those little in-betweener steps. Like, when do I put down my matte varnish? When do I put down my satin varnish? You know, those are the things when I was like, oh, when did I do this on this model? And if I just had some notes to refer to, it makes it foolproof and you get a real consistent look throughout your whole army.
So I actually have a very simple thing, an idea that will work for everybody and something that I've put into use myself. So forget about the apps. I mean, like my big thing is pulling out paints when I'm doing batches. So if I'm going to be doing reds, I pull out all the reds for the, you know, all the paints that I use for red. Or if I'm doing metallics, I pull them so I don't have to reach back to my paint shelf. They're all right there. If I mess something up, I can go and I don't have to go fumbling. You know, Chris, Justin, Paul, and I talked a little bit this morning about sub-assembly and those kinds of deals. This, what I'm about to tell you is the best thing that I've done for my hobby, my commission stuff, is I buy a sheet of brown paper bag roll, whatever you call that. It's like packing paper. Is that what that is? Chris, you should know.
Could be butcher paper, could be a roll.
I know butcher paper.
Yeah.
So I used to just paint directly on top of my desk, or I'd paint on top of my cutting board. Now I take the brown paper roll, whatever you want to call it, wax paper, because I could spray directly on top of it, if I need to, but you can, it's like going to Macaroni Grill. You can write your name upside down, introduce yourself to your hosts, but no, you jot down the steps. And it's especially great. Forget about painting. Like when you're doing assembly and you're saying, okay, I've got 26 legs, but I've only got 24 backpacks. How am I going to make this work? It lets you keep track of everything right there. And it's right there on your table with models on top of it. If you need to reference it, just move the bases and the models away. And it's something that you can, when the project's done or halfway through the project, you can throw it away and put new paper down. It's super
My
cheap.
My paint desk looks effective. Like a dumpster fire compared to what you're describing here.
Y'all, I seriously, Paul, I really recommend it.
No, it sounds great. It's like a great idea. I don't think
that we recently had a tornado in Utah, and I feel like it probably organized my desk a little bit more than it already was. So
I don't want to take away from what you're saying. I think that is actually a very good idea, especially when you're doing, even if you're doing a squad or several squads, like, you know, you're breaking open your battle for Prospero and you're about to, or burning a Prospero. You're about to paint 30 TAC Marines. You know, that, that sounds like a really good way to get everything aligned.
And I think the other genius part about it is that you can save it. If you're trying to figure out a trick way to paint Librarian blue armor or whatever it might be, and you finally nailed it down, it's a step-by-step process. If you start with dark blue and then your next coat is med blue, but that didn't work, so you can scratch that off. And then electric blue is your next tone. You're like, okay, that worked, leave it. And then your next highlight's this. And if it worked and you want to remember that, you just cut that little piece of paper, rip it off, and nail it to the wall. You know, it's always going to be there until you have a tornado or a fire or something like that. Then it's you're screwed.
I'm digging on that. We got another thing from Forge World today, which I'm excited about. The bulletin was the big AdMech tank.
Oh, God. Paul, you know, AdMech.
How big would you say it is, Paul? That's a tech thrall in the photo next to it, right?
Yeah, it's giant. It looks to me essentially like a conveyor and a half size.
It kind of makes me think of like if the Mechanicum had a lowrider tracked vehicle, because it just seems kind of flat and squat, like pancaked it, and not in a bad way. It seems like not very tall.
Isn't it just a conveyor with treads that are wider set?
In the aesthetics, it is very similar. There's a few things that are different about it. But it does. It to me, I think it's about the size of a conveyor and a half size on top of that. The stats on it, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the stats, but there's no getting
around. What are they? Awesome. Like, what are the highlights for that?
To break the book out, it's essentially like it is a transport, but it doesn't have a bunch of guns on it. It's like there's a point to gun ratio, I think, that's off on
it. What's the armor value, first of all?
It's 14. No, it's no joke.
Okay.
It's probably trying to balance out how point efficient the pain train is.
Very possible. And it does, I mean, it does have guns on it. I mean, again, I don't want to down talk it, especially not having the stats in hand. I just remember not being particularly impressed with the stats. But I didn't start the Admech Army because I like the stats. I started it because I wanted to paint a conveyor.
Well, I love that. You want to paint one model and you end up painting
and now an I have entire three, army. Three of them.
Right. Yeah. And you fall in love with the rest of the army just for that one model.
Oh, it made it everything come around when those Ursarax models came out because those, God, they're just so brutal looking. I've talked about them to death, though. I won't bore you guys. I did get finished painting them. I've got to put some tufts on them, which I'm going to be like, what a world we live in. There's just all kind of great products out there for basing. I know we talked about
it. It's a tough call.
Oh, yeah, Paul. Doesn't your buddy have a tuft company? What are they called?
Well, Shadow's Edge is a sponsor of Warzone. They're actually they put together a special product for we're going to be able to hand out a selection of tufts. Like I want to say it's like 25 to 30 tufts in as part of their registration. Like everyone's going to get a sample of these things. I've gone back and started using them on all my Blood Angels. I mean, they stick very well. They do exactly what you want them to do. And they come in a variety of colors.
So I want to have a talk with them because I want to make some tufts that I don't think is in their lineup that I think everybody's going to want.
Check out the website. I mean,
are they going to be at, yep. Well, nobody makes these kinds of tufts.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, yeah, he will be there on site.
Awesome. And what's his name so everybody else knows?
Just look for the booth. Look for the Shadow's Edge booth.
Okay.
Yeah, they will be out there in the normal area. Yep. So what we're talking about is the Macro Carid Explorator. That's the thing that's going to be on sale for the first time pretty soon, coming up from Forge World. And it is. It just looks so good. Even like the gunner on the back of it looks, to me, very cool.
It looks very aggressive. It's got that sort of ram nose sort of thing on the top, the ridge. It kind of reminds me of you ever see that old 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that like sort of ramming fin that submarine had.
God, this thing, it just looks like a beast, and I'm drooling over it right now. I may have been down talking the stats, but I will most likely be painting one of these up.
Can't say I blame you. I think it's a real sexy looking model.
Yeah,
it fits with your army too. I mean, it's like the only other tank that your army has, right?
Well, no, they've got it. There's some like medium sized like Predator tanks, like Sakaran sized tanks for the Admech, and they look pretty cool.
They're a little smaller. They're actually fairly compact. They're like Rhino size, and they punch so hard. it's like ordnance las cannon shots, multiple ordnance las cannon shots from those things. They're brutal.
A lot of power in the Admech, and I expect to see them in the combat patrol event. I expect to see some of the Astra Militarum stuff and the Admech stuff in the combat patrol. Just because you can get a lot of value out of the points, that point limit. It's 400 points, by the way.
400?
Combat patrol. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, not the Explorator. Combat patrol event.
I was going to say, well.
No, the Explorator
What's the point cost on Horus?
He's 500.
Yeah, 500 points. He's 525. Okay. Something like that. Yeah. All right. He's very good.
So I was thinking about just showing up with Horus, but he's probably has two up armor. Right?
He does have two up armor. You could almost take
but I'm allowed one.
Yeah. You can almost take Angron. It's
yeah, because he's only got the three up. So
yeah, but isn't he like 420 points or something?
Angron, I think he's 420 or 425.
Yeah,
I'm just throwing this out there. I haven't seen the rules, obviously, but I'm pretty sure Angron has like 19 wounds.
No,
is that correct?
I think he's got five or six.
Yeah, Forge World again just killing it though with the grav tank for the custodes that we've seen, and then decals for the custodes.
Yeah. I mean, I just keep thinking like, all right, you guys keep coming out with all this cool stuff, refine your art, right? When it gets to the very best, then you come out with the Blood Angel stuff I've been waiting for.
But with the decals, they don't fit on any of that custode armor, and they don't look like they fit on the new tank. They will fit on the tank, and they certainly are.
That's exactly too where big I was going
to put on Contemptors. You know, so there's got to be we can like just take this and that. Extrapolate this from right now that there's going to be more stuff coming back for the Custodes.
Paul, I want to take us down a quick little side street. Do we think, and is there any evidence that there is a quote unquote 40K end times upon us?
That's quite the rabbit hole.
That would be a big topic for us to, and we're almost out of time on this segment. But I want to on right now on this decal sheet, I'd go so far as to say there is even maybe stuff that could go on Knight shoulder pads. Like that's how big some of these decals look to me.
They're a pretty decent size.
Would the Custodes have Knights?
No, they have. Well, we don't know what they have. We know that from pictures. And I think some little tidbits here in some of the novels, they have jet bikes.
There's in that Visions of Heresy book that I've got, I think there are some Custodes on bikes. They've got some interesting stuff. And I'm wondering if a lot of their release is going to wait until the Siege of Terra, or if it's going to be related to the Emperor's battle against the forces of the warp inside the Golden Throne. Because that webway portal that he's building on Terra, there's fighting that's going on in there constantly during the course of the Heresy.
I listened to a video today about the 40 facts you didn't know about the Golden Throne. There were only 13 facts, so it's kind of
total.
Well, in this video that it wasn't 40. The name of the title was 40 facts, but it's just there were only 13 facts, or well under 40. That you may not have known about the Golden Throne. And they do, of course, reference that webway portal battle. But let's take a break and we'll come back. We're going to talk about we're definitely going to have the finishing move segment this week. And finishing move, since we got Adam here, one of the best painters, definitely one of the best commission painters out there, one of the best painters on the scene right now. We're going to talk about some of the more difficult parts of lenses of actual, like not necessarily just, we're not talking about space marine eyes. We're talking about lights and lenses on anything. I know we kind of talked about power weapons before and kind of glow effects, but this is a totally different animal. I'm going to try to kind of cover more finishing move segment. Anyway, see you guys in just a minute.
Sounds good.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey, everybody, we are back. I got Chris Morgan and Adam Abramowitz with me.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
I am still here.
Big thing you're going to see over the next series of tournaments from now until probably forever is Gene Stealer Cults. I had the privilege of playing against one last weekend, just in a test game. And it's the army is every bit of as brutal as we've been talking about, but it has a lot going on. I mean, there are roles to do. There's things to explain. You're picking up models and moving them around. You're having to make a lot of decisions that can add up to time. And so if you're going to be taking them in a tournament, I definitely suggest playing these types of test games and not having be your first couple of games with them, or like legitimate games be them, be those the first rounds of a couple of a tournament, because you're going to need to finish your games to do everything to really win out and max up points.
You know, as a tournament player, I think one of the things that sometimes we do is we look at an army list, like say we look at Harlequins and we say, oh, well, we're probably not going to be dealing with Harlequins all that much. But, so I'm not really going to care to learn the rules except when I'm playing the game. I think the Gene Stealer Cult are going to be a big enough influence, a big enough problem that as an opponent, taking the time to play test against somebody and learn those rules will help your games go faster as well. And it's going to be important for you to know, because you're going to want to know what the shenanigans are.
Also, as a precaution to the people that are bringing Gene Stealer Cult, if you don't know what you're doing and you're not being effective and efficient with the way you're playing the game, I mean, you can lose games by the clock. If you are either intentionally or unintentionally slow playing,
unintentionally, because this is just one of those things. The army is very powerful. It has lots of rules and it has lots of models too. So there's lots. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on that you've just got to kind of, you've got to really nose down and get the process done. And then also kind of maybe know where to point your opponent to look in the rules. Like he's going to say, I don't understand what's happening right now. And you've got to be able to quickly resolve those interactions with the opponent. And this is nothing about or any I guess I'm not trying to color it with any players or whatever. This is just a trapping of a brand new army. And these are going to be appearing in turn because they're worth it. They're beautiful, beautiful models, powerful army, something that people want to play with. And so you're going to see it. So I just suggest just familiarizing yourself with the book, how to quickly resolve the things with opponents, and then be just really focused on moving the models around when you're during the tournament game.
Yeah, any high model count army, you have that exact problem where you can't be idly chit-chatting while you're trying to move your models around lackadaisically. You've got to be on it. And that's not telling people to rush their strategies or anything, but it is courteous to your opponent at the very least.
I played against a great player playing Gene Steeler Cults this past weekend. And we did not have these things occur, but I noticed like these are like, I can see where this all could break down if someone is not focused on it. And remember, you're there on that social contract. You're trying to get your turn done in an equal amount of time so your opponent gets his turn done, and then you get to play the games to the natural conclusion.
Yeah, nothing is worse than having that up in the air. Like, well, if the game had gone to full time, maybe I would have won, or maybe I would have lost, or whatever it could have been.
That stuff is going to happen. And I mean, it is going to happen from time to time. But especially with a new army, you've got to just really be aware of that clock ticking away. So I definitely suggest prepping, you know, maybe like we talk about preparation, you know, maybe you put little sticky notes, colored sticky notes on where you think some of the like maybe friction points would be with the codex. So you've got them on hand and ready to show your opponent if necessary. Anything that shaves any seconds off that clock at every interaction is going to benefit you.
So I, you know, going back to exactly what you're saying, be prepared for this because I know of at least five people going to Warzone with this army. And those might be the only five people going with Gene Steeler Cult. But if you are not bringing Gene Steeler Cult, you got to understand what you're facing. Because there's, like Paul said, there's a lot of tricks.
It's strong. I love the army. I really do. I think it's going to be a big contender, and I'm standing by that. But I saw it play out. It was incredibly powerful. And this variant used the Flying Hive Tyrants that we've talked about. There's so much going on the ground, and then having those Flying Hive Tyrants is kind of like the rogue element really caused some choice confusion on my part. What do I do? Do I do defensive maneuvers here? Do I try to rush? What do I do to just combat everything that army had going on? There's lots of answers, lots of threats. Everything in that army is a threat or an answer.
I think I know who you were playing against. I'm not going to say that I for sure know, but I remember him posing a question to a couple friends, and I was involved in that conversation, and I said, yes, go with the Hive Tyrants. It just complements that list so well.
I think it does. And maybe we see things. You know, I've talked about adding in the Psychonid Division and other IG stuff, you know, ensuring that you go first, maybe throwing in a Codia somewhere in there. Because think that any advantage you can, everything that you can do to give that army an advantage is almost, it's more win, you know. So it has a lot going on. I think it's a well-designed army. The more I think about it, and then the more experience I get playing on the other side of it. And more to come on that. Hopefully see some results and some interesting interactions at the big event we've got coming up. I know this segment we've got Finishing Moves, which is sponsored by GameMat.eu. This, you know, we talked about their pre-painted scenery and terrain and stuff, but they also make some amazing mats. And then we got some great art. The neoprene mats look sharp, really high def designs. That they really are kind of a one-stop shop as far as like proing up your table. I definitely suggest going and checking out their website if you have not already. And they are the sponsor of this week's Finishing Move segment, which is going to be about lenses and lighting effects. It's a really intimidating topic for some people.
Well, and it involves acknowledging light as a factor in your modeling. And the second you get in that mindset that the same light isn't shining all around the model, that there's light shining from the model, you get a little nervous because you think, well, what color is light? What kind of light is it? Like, how is it going to behave, et cetera, et cetera. It really doesn't have to be that hard or that stressful if you're just looking to take that one extra step.
So I was actually told recently that the reason that they thought that my Tau Army, Paul, and this is when I first met Paul, my first interaction with Forge Narrative, before I actually ever listened to a show, I went to the Forge Narrative seasonal, and somebody told me that the reason that they thought that my Tau Army, which I think is it was a fantastic army. It's a beautiful army, but I don't think it's the best work that I've ever done. But the reason that they thought that it was the clear winner, the best painted category, was because of the lighting effects. And there's a lot to think about, as Chris was saying, when you're thinking about lighting effects, is how am I trying to make this lighting effect work? Is it a glow effect? Is it a bouncing effect? Is it light that is protruding through the lens or from the light? You know, how am I going to do this? And Paul, I'd like to hear how do you do lenses and how do you do lights?
Well, I am, like, when I see painters, like when I'm watching tutorials, and I mean, any of them, they always save the lenses for last, and they just get their brush and they just paint the lens and move on with their lives. They paint it and then they highlight it and then you get the dot of white. Like, oh, how on earth do you get that paintbrush in that tiny little area without getting that color all over the rest of the face? Like, that's what happens to me all the time. I am better at touching up. I can touch up like a madman. So
I think there's actually a trick to that. And I think it's using and hear me out here, because you guys are all going to say no. Use a bigger brush than you think that you need to.
No.
No. So you don't need to use a triple zero brush.
As far as like just giving folks like tips, I always, at least when I give people like just, I guess, casual tips, people ask me, how did you do that or whatever, or I can't do what I see somebody else do. And a lot of times you'll see painters suggesting a brush that's right for them. And I'm not saying that's what you're doing here, but I'm saying if you need to paint everything with an ultrafine detail brush, and I mean everything, shoulder pads, armor, then you do it, like whatever you need to do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. I almost use a double zero brush exclusively unless I'm painting big, big things. But you don't need a number X or a triple zero or quadruple zero or whatever brush just to paint lenses. And there's a reason to that. When you're painting tiny, tiny areas, whether it's a tiny lens on the mount on a helmet, you know, like the viewer scope on a helmet, or, you know, I'm looking at I've got three Storm Ravens in front of me, and I've got, what are they called? The Storm Strike missiles or Hell Strike missiles, Paul?
Seems right.
Yeah, I think Storm Strike is the... you're talking about the Strength 8 AP2 concussive,
yeah,
right?
The wing-mounted missiles, like, yeah, they mount under the wings, and they've got a little lens in there. You can actually, if you look at what Games Workshop is trying to do with their new gem paints, the gemstone paints, where they're saying, pull up, don't do the Duncan move where you string out and twist out. And I know, Chris, that irks you. Twist out the paint on the brush. You actually want to pull it up a little bit on the tip. That's kind of what you want to do. And on the bigger brushes, you can actually keep a finer tip and keep a more sturdy tip with that brush because there's more bristles to support it. It's triangulation. I mean, if any of y'all took physics classes, it's triangulation in a brush. And you're going to end up having more control. It's all about the pressure that you use. But I think that's a little too in-depth in where you wanted to go at this point.
Well, this is part of that, learning how to put the extra 10 minutes into your figure or extra 30 minutes into a squad to really give them that extra little bit of table presence, something that people notice, people that see maybe that you didn't have the confidence to do before. It's just about getting the confidence. And suggesting what you're talking about is building that confidence. Oh, I didn't think about it that way. I didn't think about it as the pressure that I'm applying. I didn't think about that maybe I might get a better result with a different brush. And so, yeah, that's definitely in line with what we're talking about. But I do want to address, you know, maybe how to even go about the process in general. And this is not just for Space Marine helmets. You can use the same premise for lights in general. Heck, even Games Workshop just did, and our man Duncan Rhodes just did a tutorial on how to make liquid vials. And that even has a very similar kind of a similar.
It's, I mean, it's the exact same approach, just a different application. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the first things that you need to decide if you're just trying to make that finishing move is, do you want it to glow or do you want it to just shine? And glow as in,
yeah, shining is just fine. Shining is good enough. Like, yeah, glowing is well beyond the step of what is reasonability, maybe.
Right.
But go ahead, Chris.
The glow effect can be done fairly simply, but the people that do OSL great make it great because of the time they spend on it. I'm not sure that time falls into what we're trying to do with our segment here, but one of the things that I think is important is the color of whatever it is that's going to be the glass surface, the glow, right? If you have yellow armor, a yellow light isn't really going to look good. I think your color choice in this situation is going to be just as important as your technique. So start with the color, decide what you want to do. Like for example, I have a conundrum now that I have Blood Angel Devastators, so that in the 18 years I've played the army, I've never had Devastators, but now they can get grav amps, right? So I've been left with this conundrum because the Blood Angel Devastators have blue helmets, but all of my lenses have been blue up to this point. So now I'm thinking I've got to have a different lens color if I'm going to hope for this guy's eyes to stand out. So making that decision early, I think, is going to be very helpful for you as you're designing the colors of the model in general.
Yeah. So Chris, I mean, to expand on what you're saying, color theory happens before, and I think it should happen before you ever lay down paint on a model, even if it's your base color. I had a conversation with a client of mine, and he sent me a photo of a Dark Angel Scout that he had painted, I mean, superbly with a very effective camouflage, and it was Dark Angel's green with a nice tan camouflage pattern, and he had painted his lens a bright green. And the problem with it was that it was the same, I mean, it was almost the same color. So it doesn't pop. Even if he executed it perfectly, you don't see it. It doesn't pop. It's forgettable. And I had a conversation with him, and it comes down to, again, Chris, color theory is, if you're painting something green, you have some great contrasting colors that you can use, like red or blue, but he wanted to keep it within the green family. So pick a bluer shade green in that case if you're working with a yellow shade green. So I told him to simply paint the visor white, several thin coats of white, take Nylock Oxide, which we've spoken about in this segment in previous iterations of the show, do a light coat with that, and then if you need to, go back and highlight white. And that contrast of the blue green to the yellow shade green really made that visor pop, and it was a focal point on the model that you're never going to forget.
Let's go even lower tech than some of this stuff. One way that I've painted lenses in the like, this is almost like my go-to right now, is that after I get the model done, I try my best, and I go in and I paint the eye area white. And then I'll get a glaze or an ink or a wash that I think is the right color, and I'll
absolutely
use that to tint the white.
So, Paul, I think that is whether you're doing a vehicle lens or you're doing a Space Marine eye lens or a gemstone or anything of that nature. Gemstone lens painting 101 is paint it white, get a couple solid light coats of white on there first, and glaze it with something like Bloodletter or Gulliman Blue or Lamenter's Yellow. There's several, I think there's like Waywatcher Green. There's several colors out there that you can do that with, and you can build it up. And if you have to highlight it, you highlight it with just a dab of white right on top.
And that's it. You can even, if you get good, like the same wash control that you use for other areas of a model will work for lenses too. So if you need more wash in one area, you know, of course you pull it off to that one area, and maybe the highlights kind of take care of themselves because of the way you've let the wash dry and settle.
And you know what, Paul, you were talking a little bit about like getting sloppy, and just to backtrack before I forget, if you're going in there and you're trying to get detailed with a lens of any type, there's a quick way to rectify that. If we're going to just take a Space Marine lens, for example, we'll use that as an example first. Throw some Nolan oil back on top. That'll darken down the edges where it got sloppy. And if you have to, you can reinforce the edges of the armor underneath the eye with the base paint that you use and re-highlight it and go back and do the lens again.
Let me tell you, you mentioned Nolan oil. for something that's like that delicate, or what I consider delicate, I often use soft body black from Secret Weapon.
Well, I do too. I do too. Not soft body black's perfect.
I use that whenever when I want to be feel like I'm being look delicate and refined with it.
I reserve known oil only to metallics nowadays, and soft body black is the wash that I use if I need a quote unquote black wash.
It's got a much different sheen than the known oil, and not that you don't top coat your miniatures and the sheen is irrelevant, but that's something to consider because the sheen makes other things behave differently on the model too later on down the road.
Absolutely.
So one thing with and I don't use this on lenses very often, is the sort of gloss shade that you can, well, it's not a shade per se, but it's a gloss that you can varnish. Put on. Yeah, varnish. That's the right word for it.
Let the artisan fabricator take over.
The thing that I like to do with the headlamps and things like on Ryan is you have those headlamps that you can put on them. I like to add that on those headlights, just something to differentiate it from just, oh, here's yellow behind a steel cage on a light bulb.
So you know what, Chris, it's funny that you say that. So I, when it comes to like cockpits and certain lamps, like if I have a bunch of lenses, many of them I want to be bright, and I want them, and my go-to color right now, and we were actually talking about this earlier this week, Chris, is turquoise. I like turquoise worked up to white for my OSL effects and my lenses, but sometimes I want a lens on there and a couple different lenses that I just want to be black, or sometimes a cockpit. And to much debate, I would say, last year at Warzone with my Sons of Horus Army, there were a lot of people that didn't like my black cockpit. Paul doesn't like it. I know that. It's a style choice, and it's something that I really like. And I think a black, like just a jet black cockpit, or sometimes a jet black lens, and then with a nice gloss coat over top of it, is really effective because it creates the contrast. It creates the, not necessarily the contrast, but the highlights for you. And I know it's not like GW, and painting the GW way isn't always the most realistic way of painting. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, we're playing with sci-fi really super speaks soldiers.
To
me,
and I like to do it. Yeah, we're playing sci-fi super soldiers, exactly. But I like the way black cockpits and on the occasion a black lens looks.
For headlamps and stuff that we're talking about, I typically paint them a base coat of black. And then when I'm painting in the light effects, I don't paint the whole square, the whole thing. You know, you do it, you know, you just paint almost like an outline that's slightly inside of what the border is, and that gives you that kind of mock glow effect, lighting effect on one of those pieces.
Just try getting in there and making a nice white base coat. You can even do a very bright silver base coat if you wanted to. And find the wash that works best for you, or the glaze that works best for you, whether it's Koala Green Shade or Dragon Off Nightshade, Bloodletter, Nylock Oxide, whatever you want to do. Something that is more medium to pigment. So, and you can also make your own. We'll get into that maybe on a later topic. And just see how it looks. And then if it's not bright enough, just put a dab of bright or a dab of silver right on top and see how it looks then. I think you're really going to like the effect. It's a very, very simple way to make lenses look dope as heck.
You do need a flat, like a very smooth surface for this to work. Like you have to, I definitely suggest before you lay down that base coat that you will wash over or glaze over, that you do make sure it's a couple of thin coats or one solid flat coat.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're working with whites or any light coat, whether it's bone or yellow or anything like that, you're going to have to do several very light layers and work it up, or else you're going to get streaks, because the yellow shade pigments, and for whatever reason, whites as well, the pigments tend to streak more than a blue shade pigment will. So always keep that in mind. And you can do the same effect. I mean, if you want to take like an electric blue or Baharoth blue, actually that's a great color as your base, and then wash it down with Dragon Off Nightshade or even Koala Green Shade. If you want to get real funky with it, if you're working with Chaos, especially Zinch, what is it, Churchy Violet? You can make some really cool effects happen. I think I just gave you guys a winner.
Well, Baharoth we
Blue with Churchy Violet.
Yeah, I like that. We talk about some kind of talent in a bottle, too. I believe the first time, the Games Workshop Edge Paints this past week. And I used the Dorn Yellow, and let me tell you, it worked like a charm.
I've had my eye on that one.
Yeah, it works like a charm. I'm telling you, works exactly as described.
Paul, are the edge paints for specifically for edging, or are they for dry brushing?
No, there is a dry brush paint style or theme from the Games Workshop stuff, but this is a brighter. It's like the brightest that would be your very very top coat edge highlight.
And what's the pigment contact like? Is it more like a base coat where you only need one, or do you need several layers?
It was like the base coat. I mean, it worked in one go for me. Right out of the bottle, one. I mean, I was highlighting. You use a very little of it, too. I mean, I'm highlighting a yellow helmet with Dorn yellow, and it behaved exactly as I wanted it to. But the color there is great for the highlight on a lens or a light because it's that bright.
I just sometimes I like to sit back and appreciate the fact that we have, you know, the Crayola box of hobby paints that we can go to for all of these different tasks, because I would not know how to mix or create an edge highlight paint on my own.
Well, before you would just either find the brightest one, or you'd add white to it, or you'd add yellow, or, you know, you'd do something like that to give you that edge highlight color. Now we're blessed with not having to remember formulas or mix stuff. But the same thing applies, though. Like edge highlighting, like you do and everything, is where you want to take your lenses or lights to that next level also. Even if you just – because, look, I am not about – like doing the painting the lens and then going back in and doing painting a line on the underside of the lens. And then, like, I'm just not good at that. I don't think I'm ever going to be good at that without practice, but I have found these techniques that really help me. And I think, you know, Adam, to your point that you gave me some tips earlier in the scope of this show of maybe a different brush and about the pressure of the hand that might make this process go a little bit easier. And then with the tools and the products that we have to choose from out there, this is no longer an intimidating task.
And this is a general statement for painting broad scale, not just the topic of the show tonight, not just lenses and lamps and what have you. But if you have to fight the brush that you are using, the brush that is in your hand, it's not the right brush. So if you're trying to do an edge highlighter, if you're trying to dry brush, or if you're trying to recess wash, and the paint is not behaving the way that you want it to with that brush, try a different brush and find the brush that will work. And investing in, as Chris said earlier in the show, investing in good brushes will help you a lot, a metric ton. I use from several different brands. I try to always use Kolinsky Sable brushes. They're a little bit more expensive, but they do last longer. They don't fray if you take good care of them. Make sure you don't get paint in the ferrules, but they'll last you for several months. And that's painting as much as I do. And I paint for 10 hours, if not 12 hours a day. It's a worthy investment in your hobby, because you're not only going to get cleaner lines and better effects because you have the brushes that behave the way that you need them to, you're also just going to have less headache. So right now I'm using Reaper's line.
Brushes are very nice. Product. And you can compensate. Like if you're a really awesome painter and you can make up for the technique to compensate for the product, that's great. If you're an average painter, then there's no shame in relying on the products. And this is one of those things that even though you still need a little bit of skill and precision. But if you go in and put the white in the eyes, like we talked about for the quick and easy one, and you get some white on the face or the helmet or whatever, it's not supposed to be there. My next bit of advice is finishing the eye and then just touch up the surrounding area. Finish the lens and then touch up the surrounding area.
Yeah, I mean, that's a natural progression of steps there. If you get the lens to where you like it and you mess up around on the helmet, don't worry about the helmet.
Yeah, don't even worry about it. You can make that look good
real easy. Yeah, because what's around the lens is not what's going to pop. It's the lens is what's going to pop. And make sure that looks crisp. Make sure it pops. It looks good. It's clean and bright, and it's having the effect that you want. You can fix that helmet, and even if the helmet doesn't look as good as it did before you put that lens in there, having the lens next to it is just going to make you forget about that little mistake.
It really does, and you can't ignore this. I mean, like, I know in the past I probably haven't painted the lenses. My red helmets were just red. They were shaded, you know, and highlighted with some edge highlights around the, you know, where they needed to be. But, you know, I didn't really put a lot of time in the lens, but they really stand out. They really help that model. It's just like painting the hoses, you know, the little, between the elbow joints and the leg joints and thigh joints and stuff on a model. It makes a huge difference.
Anything to break up that monotony of color.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Is useful.
I know we're talking Space Marine centric, but this is the same thing you do for an Eldar.
But if
for Tau, Space Marines for
in anything else.
Even like Iglow in a Necron, you know, or something like that, the same principles can apply.
Yeah, just a little bit of precision. And then, of course, the hard way is the multiple layers of paint. And this it really obviously looks great. It's what we see in tutorials. It's, you know, the darker color, a line of the highlight color, and then dots in the front corner and back corner of the eye slot, just to give it that extra glow effect or extra, I guess, highlight effect, you know, or white and then your shade of your choice.
And that effect is all well and good, but at 3 feet across the table, the effect with the white and a wash, if you do it correctly and you do it effectively, it's going to look the same, or it might look better. You're not going to see that detail unless you're right up close with a 4K camera and perfect lighting. And kudos to all. And you know, I spend a lot of time on lenses, and I do it because that's what my customers expect, and it's what I like to do. But if you're going to a tournament, or if you're just going to show up and have a well painted army, and you want to take pride in your work, there's nothing wrong with doing it the way that we do. Nobody's going to judge you if you can't pull off the effects of some guy with a camera on the internet who makes tutorials. No offense, Duncan, or anybody else that does that, but they're professionals. You know, unless you're doing this for a living, you shouldn't hold yourself to that standard, because nobody would expect you to go out and hit 3 home runs a night if you didn't play professional baseball.
I feel like someone should make a movie about that. Expectations and disappointment. Like, we're on to something here, guys.
I think that this is important to remember, though, or to point out, that the same techniques that work on lenses also work on, like, a scope. Like, if you mounted the scope bit on your bolter or any kind of rifle or anything, scope, it works great for sometimes the tip of a laser gun, you know, whatever that happens to be, plasma, any type of stuff like that. The way that you highlight that type of thing also applies, in my opinion, to any kind of lens or any type of what could be a glass effect.
And you know, it's, if you want to do it dry brushing, you can do that. I mean, Jen Haley won a crystal brush at Adepticon using dry brushed OSL. It can work. So there you go.
Oh yeah, you don't need an airbrush. And I think we haven't even touched on airbrushes, though, Chris. That's the thing. We can get into airbrushes and talk about that all day. It's a quick and easy way to do it. You need pristine airbrush control and trigger control. And it's a fantastic tools.
Even
way.
Airbrushes have they have like locks and guides where you would get that. Even if you had like a big ham finger or whatever, you would still only, it would only go back.
You know, and some people believe in those. I don't, only because I have a feeling, and in my experience, that those what do you call them, like a general, like you have in a go-kart that prevents it from going too fast?
Yep, a governor.
Like a governor. Thank you, a governor. Like it's an airbrush governor in general. That was pretty stupid. Sorry, guys.
You should patent that.
I should patent that. Thank you, Chris. But where I'm going with that is that it actually, I think, ends up clogging up the brush, because you're withholding air to some degree, and you're long story short, I don't like them. Learn brush control first. It's great if it works for you, but with an airbrush, you really gotta learn how to use it. Practice on some paper, practice on some plastic card or an old GW box, and make it work.
I think we're definitely going to hit up some airbrush techniques in the finishing move segment, because you can do some things with the airbrush that maybe you couldn't do with other things. Heck, you can even seal your miniatures indoors without having to use the aerosol cans with an airbrush. That's something we should definitely talk about too.
Yeah. I don't think you should ever seal a miniature with aerosol, because depending on the humidity outside and the moisture in the air, you come away with some really nasty results and just completely undo a lot of work that you did.
Maybe out here in the desert, it's not so big a problem, but you have a good point.
Maybe we cover that on the next Finishing Moves, but let's go ahead and wrap this up. Thanks for talking with me about this, and thanks you guys for listening. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff going on over the next couple of weeks. Cannot wait to be publishing much of that on the Facebook and in here. We've got some Army submission stuff, some articles posted. Both Andrew and Chris have articles up on ForgeNarrative.net. Please check that out. And while you're there, if you haven't already, pick up a shirt from the merch tab there. There we have a few left, and some of the sizes are, of course, we have some gamer sizes there. Some are going faster than others, but definitely check it out. You guys got anything else you want to throw in on this lens topic before we wrap up?
Well, nothing on the lens topic, but if people do want to head over to the .NET and look at my most recent article, if you have a list or an army or something you'd like to submit for us to do a spotlight on, that's something I'd like to really do as part of engagement with you guys is one of the best things about doing the show. I'd love to show off the cool stuff you're doing to the rest of the community because it only makes everything cooler for everybody else. So if you have something, hit us up.
Yeah. And can I just like on that same note, almost, Chris, can I give a PSA? Like, I get hit up by people all the time and they ask my opinion on painting. And this is what I'm trying to do. How would I do this? Do you think this is a bad idea? And they always say, sorry. And for those that have, I'm calling you out right now. When you say sorry, do not apologize for asking me a question. I don't do this and I don't spend, you know, 2-3 hours, you know, of my week, you know, doing this show for y'all to say sorry. I do this because we want to help you and this is why we're here. So never apologize for asking a question. That's that we're here to help.
Absolutely. You guys have a good rest of y'all's week and we'll see you next week.
Sounds great. See you guys. Peace out.
Thanks for listening.